Yes, it is, and welcome back as we head into hour two of our daily three-hour tour. It's a delight to welcome back to Roy Murdoch. He is a Fox News contributor, a contributing editor at National Review Online, and a senior fellow at the London Center for Policy Research. DeRoy, welcome back to the airwaves of Phoenix.
Seth, great to be back with you again.
You betcha. That London Center, is that the old, is that named after Herb London?
You're absolutely correct. People hear London Center, they think it's something few feet away from Buckingham Palace or something like that. It's actually named after Herb London, the late, great Dr. Herb London,
yeah.
A PhD, a great friend of mine,
yeah.
Who was an American patriot, a scholar, a man who wrote something like 31 or 32 books.
Yeah.
An expert on anything you can imagine. Smart guy, fun guy, charming, delightful, and unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago, I believe age 79. He didn't quite
too young.
So.
Yeah, I knew him a bit. His daughter became quite a star in her own right, as I recall. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, I think he had a little bit of a musical recording career in the 50s, maybe as well.
That's true. He was before he became a major intellectual. He ran the Hudson Institute. He founded the Gallatin Division at New York University. Early on in his career, he actually had a hit record back in the 50s.
Yeah.
Played basketball for Columbia University.
Yeah, he was really a man for all.
He did it all. Yeah, I don't think he painted or sculpted, but that's about it.
He might have. We'll know. We'll find out. Anyway, we're here to talk about
you. His daughter went on to make a name for herself as kind of a fashion.
Yeah.
I want to say, sort of like, I don't know the world so well.
A fashion
sort of
guru of sorts. Stacy, was
guru.
It? Yeah. Stacy,
yeah.
Maybe? Maybe Stacy?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Oh, he was a great man. Well, we praise great
very
men.
Much.
And you're a great man, too, DeRoy. Thank you.
Thank you very
you
much.
Wrote a piece about a couple weeks ago that I've been meaning to get to in my stack. Democrats have messed up everything. Stop voting for them. I don't think you used the word messed up, but trying to be a family show here.
Mm-hmm.
Take your pick. You go down this list, and boy, I'll tell you, this would be this should be the template for the 2022 campaign, from the border to the economy and energy to crime to education and race relations. You even talk about – you use a word I've been using more lately, DeRoy, and I never used to. You use the word totalitarianism.
Mm-hmm.
Someone the other day smart to me – the other day, a few months ago, smart to me said, you know, everyone's saying authoritarianism. Everyone is saying autocracy, tyranny. It's really totalitarianism. And I went back and was reading some old Leo Strauss, some old Hannah Arendt. They're right. I'm glad you used that word. You want to say something about it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you've got it totalitarian in a couple of respects. One is that – the Democrats are not happy unless they're barking orders at us from when we get out of bed in the morning till we crawl back into our beds at night. They want to tell you what kind of a car to drive, what kind of energy will be in that car, where you're going to work, with how many employees, and whether they do or not take a vaccine,
mm-hmm.
You know, where you can travel, what you can do on a plane, what kind of food you can eat. I mean, there's not a
every part of your life
by.
Is the point.
Every part of your life,
yeah. Yeah.
It's not like the old days. They'd say, well, we're going to tax you. We're going to take some money and give it to the poor people. And
right.
Other than that, we'll leave you alone.
Right.
Now they're doing all these other things. They're pumping the kids' minds with critical race theory and how to, you know, hate each other. And they're involved in not them directly, but certainly through their friends in Silicon Valley, you know, what you can and cannot post on Facebook or Twitter, what have you. Put the wrong thing, you're all of a sudden canceled, deplatformed. Now they want to – Biden wants to hire 87,000 new IRS agents to go through all of our bank records and see who spent what on what sort of thing, and is that unusual or strange, or should that be, you know, basically audited? And I they're not just going to stick with the 1%. They're going to be looking at all sorts of people's records if this terrible Build Back Better plan goes through. And I hope those of you who are here has discussed this, stay in touch with your senators, Mark Kelly and Kirsten Sinema, and urge them to defeat the Build Back Better Act, which is basically Build Socialism Better Act. And I just can't look at one area. The Democrats, anything they touch that prospers. I mean, they just have the heavy hand of death on everything you touch, as you mentioned, from the economy to health to crime. We just saw this terrible killing the other day. This man took a big truck and drove it through this parade. Now a sixth person has been killed. This little girl died today. She was in that critical condition. She's now dead. So six dead, 48 injured. And this is a result of, again, another Democrat left-wing policy, which is bail reform. He had absconded from Nevada and had run over his, I think, ex-girlfriend and was brought in for that, they said, okay, we'll bail $1,000. He was able to raise bail for $1,000 on the 19th. And then this mayhem happened on the 21st, 2 days later. There's no reason this guy should have been walking around as somebody who is A, a danger to others, and B, a flight risk. He was both. And if you have either rap against you, you're supposed to stay in jail. Instead, he was a danger to the community and a flight risk. And for $1,000, they let him back on the street. And now we have six dead bodies and 40 people wounded. Unbelievable. And again,
someone who
was
on.
This is what happens when you vote Democrat.
He was on bail for trying to run down his child's mom to try and kill her with his car.
Mm-hmm.
And he was out. He was out to do that because he was on bail from a previous effort to gun down his nephew. And I wonder, you know, I just wonder if Joe Biden is going to weigh in on that. You do talk about in your piece the Democrats re-racializing society. I have no doubt Joe Biden will not condemn this man. The only one he condemned was the one found innocent of all crime.
Well, that's right. And you saw in the Kyle Rittenhouse case that Biden came out and met people in the media and all these folks, oh, Kyle Rittenhouse, yep. He's a white supremacist, yep. And a white nationalist, and on and on. There's no evidence for that whatsoever.
None.
And, in fact, he said last night to Tucker Carlson, he said, I believe this is a direct quote, I support the BLM movement.
Yeah, he did say
this
that.
This guy's a BLM supporter.
Yeah,
how about
I saw that.
Not only is he not a white supremacist, he supports BLM.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to have quite a payday, and I really hope he gets some good lawyers and sues the living hell out of Biden and these people in the media and others who, without any evidence, said some of the nastiest things about him. And I think they'll have to pay and pay big, and I hope they pay till they hurt.
See, so we've already proven you wrong. There is something the Democrats have made better, wealth creation. They have made Nick Sandman much wealthier, and they will be making Kyle Rittenhouse much wealthier. Now,
go.
Maybe we shouldn't do it one at a time, DeRoy, but there might, as long as we're about wealth creation, I say just keep at it. The education part, you mentioned education. Mm-hmm. Your mayor, who today was praising Malcolm X, by the way, your mayor.
How wonderful.
Yeah. Your mayor is scrapping gifted programs in the name of equity?
Mm-hmm.
I thought
yes,
we went through
right.
this debate a long time ago, the soft bigotry of low expectations.
Well, definitely that's the exact term, soft bigotry of low expectations. The basic idea, they won't say it quite out loud, but the basic idea is that they just don't think black and Hispanic kids are able to perform in gifted programs and so on. And so rather than saying, okay, look, but we're going to have tutors available, we're going to have websites where you can get all the information you need, here's an 800 number you can call and people answer your questions over the phone, whatever it takes to help kids get ahead and get a step up. I think we all support that sort of thing. And if that gets some more black and Hispanic kids in the gifted programs, then hallelujah. But instead of doing that, they say, all right, let's take away the gifted programs, program away from everybody, so as not to embarrass the black and Hispanic kids because they don't think they're going to make it,
yeah.
Which is terrible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is the soft bigotry of low expectations, bringing down the standards for everybody, and then everybody suffers. And it's all based on the idea that, well, black and Hispanic kids, they're just not that bright, so let's not challenge them or even provide additional help if that's what they need. And let's just dumb down to think everything for everybody as we become a less sharp and less
Yeah, no, who knew when getting rid of the soft bigotry of low expectations in the early 2000s we would engage in the hard bigotry of low expectations? But that's what it's turned into, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, this is a great piece. It's important. It covers all the issues. And I just wanted to get a minute or two of your time to promote it with the audience, DeRoy. I will tell you, one of the things about this, as I'm thinking about that phrase, soft bigotry, it seems almost each and every one of these fights, whether it's the border, whether it's race, education, you know, it seems like we have been through all this before. We went through it in the late 60s. We went through it in the late 70s. And I think you do make reference to doing the same thing again and again and expecting different results. But it
mm-hmm.
does seem there every time we think we are done slaying liberal or left-wing dragons, more come. Life will find a way, I guess, huh?
I had this exact discussion with some folks at dinner last night. We said, these people just never learn. And you think, okay, we finally brought down the Berlin Wall.
Right.
That's behind us. We finally achieved energy independence. We'll keep that. No. The communism is coming back. In fact, I think in Chicago they had some parade, or I should say demonstration, tied into the whole Rittenhouse situation.
Yep.
And they were calling for, quote, a communist revolution, unquote, those exact words.
Yep.
We figured we would have taken care of the energy thing after the energy crisis under Jimmy Carter. Here it is again.
Yep.
And now we've got empty store shelves, which is brand new. I mean, the idea of empty store shelf space in America is almost, you know, it's sacrilegious to our religion of capitalism, if you want to look at it that way. And now we've got empty store shelves in what seems to be turning into Venezuela light here. So yeah,
Bernie Sanders won. He said red lines are a good thing. He's won.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Okay.
So maybe the bread lines are next.
Yeah.
The left never learns. They just sit down and rest for about 2 minutes, and they come back, you know, harder and more energetically than before. And so we just constantly have to win these battles and rewin them and refight them, and it never stops. You never can take a break. And I think Thomas Jefferson was correct that it really takes eternal vigilance.
I think you're right.
To defeat tyranny and maintain liberty.
Absolutely right, DeRoy Murdoch. I know this was a quickie. We'll have you on longer next time, but this was something I needed to get out and promote, if nothing else, then to clear my own conscience. But thank you, sir. I appreciate
right,
your
Seth.
Time.
Well, great
and
to talk to you.
Always.
Okay.
DeRoy Murdoch from Fox News, National Review, and the London Center, named after a great man in Herb London. I am Seth Leibson. We will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. Sandy has been patiently awaiting in Phoenix. Hello, Sandy.
Hi, Seth. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I am really frustrated. I take my great nieces to the Nutcracker every year for the last 18 years, and we're talking 10, 12 of them. And bought our tickets, excited for this year because they didn't have it last year. And our performance is in 3 weeks. I get a letter from Ballet Arizona saying that everyone 12 and above has to have proof of vaccination, an ID, or they have to have a negative test within 72 hours of the performance and a certain type of test. Plus, they have to wear masks. Well, their moms... I threw it out there, let them decide. I'm inoculated, but I don't believe I need to be showing that to anybody. That's my personal business. And here I am trying to frequent and support the arts that I have done for a lot of years and spent thousands of dollars on with Ballet Arizona, whom we have loved. And the mom said, no. When I told my 5-year-old she was going to have to wear a mask during the performance, she cried. The other one said, the 3-year-old, she's not going to put it on. And I'm not going to get inoculated in order to go. So this just came out, and I called Ballet Arizona. I said, why did you wait so long to inform us of this? And, well, we just made this decision. Hopefully I'm going to get a refund, but that's not even the point. Seth, how far and how long does this go on, and what can we do? The only thing I know what to do is to talk with my pocketbook, and I'll just get my refund and... I just don't know what to do anymore about this. How do we protect our children? How do we protect ourselves? How much do we give in?
Okay. First of all, Sandy, I know it may sound saccharine, but I mean it not that. I don't mean it to be. I feel your pain totally, completely, in everything you're saying. The people at the Arizona, is it the Arizona Ballet?
Ballet Arizona.
Ballet Arizona. There's a question they need to answer, and I don't know if anyone has asked them this. And it's a question everyone who mandates a vaccine or a test within 72 hours, I think, needs to answer as well. And that is this. We know that the vaccinated can get COVID. We know this.
Right.
We know that the vaccinated can transmit COVID. The CDC's very first study out of Massachusetts, after they told us to put masks back on after the vaccine was developed, told us this. We know the vaccinated can get COVID, and we know the vaccinated can transmit COVID. Why then is the vaccine as good or better than the testing requirement? I don't understand what they can possibly say. If you test negative, you are proof that you have no COVID, right? If you take a test, you have no COVID. You cannot spread it. You have a vaccine proof card? You have a proof of vaccine? None of that is true. It doesn't mean you don't have COVID, and it doesn't mean you can't spread it. They are perpetuating a lie and a myth for reasons only explainable to them, I suppose, and harming children's mental health on the way. The image I won't get out of my head, Sandy, is an Arizona Republic picture online from about 3 months ago talking about vaccinating children. And it has a picture of a child, young girl. You know the picture, Bill, I'm talking about? It doesn't work well on radio. I'm just validating. The child has a mask on and is getting a shot in the arm, an injection in the arm, okay, to highlight the story about children vaccines coming. And you can't tell, because of this mask on this child's face, you can't tell, six-year-old girl, I think, whether she's screaming or laughing. You can't tell. Right. And I think that should be the image of our moment. The image of our moment. Are we making our kids scream? Are we reinventing Edward Munch here throughout the country? Or are we making them better, happier, and healthier children and people? We're not. We're not. What to do? Well, I have a few ideas. First of all, all yours are correct. Tell as many people you can about it and stop going there. Stop giving them your money. And maybe even drive them out of business, quite frankly. I believe our children's and our society's social and mental health is more important than going to the ballet. I just happen to. That's my preference.
Absolutely.
The second thing. Absolutely. You bet. The second thing. Thank you for that, for agreeing. The second thing is I say we start demanding of everyone running for elected office, particularly state officials, that we demand that they pledge to use at their disposal every power available to prevent any entity from enforcing a mandate on any person under the age of 18. I really do. And if we're really creative, we could structure it to include any institution of business, recreation, or worship for the rest of the population, too. But would it be so hard to start asking elected leaders or potentially elected leaders whether they will pledge to use every power at their disposal to prevent mandates on children over decisions that are best left to their parents so that the state and these institutions dependent on our charity do not replace us as parents? Is it too much to ask that? I think we should ask every one of them that.
Absolutely. And can I say, too, I just recently started substitute teaching because I know the schools are desperate. And I like the littles, so I do elementary. It is exhausting.
Sure.
And what I have found out from other teachers is because these kids – the first graders didn't have kindergarten because it was online. So they're basically kindergartners in first grade.
Yeah.
And she said, wait till you do the second graders, because they were in person for half a year, online for a year, and now they're second graders, but at the level of a preschooler kindergartner.
You know what,
it
Sandy?
It's heartbreaking.
Wait till they're 30. You know what we're going to have when they're 30?
Yes.
We're going to have children in adult bodies. That's what this society is making, children in adult bodies. And it sounds like the Arizona Ballet is run by them, quite honestly.
Absolutely.
I'll fight this with you anyway. I got to take the break. You're welcome to hold if you have more, but I got to take the quick news break. Your choice. We'll be right back. I want to thank parents like Sandy who just called in, concerned citizens like Sandy. Sandy, you're always welcome to call back. It's always interesting to me that someone is forced in this society to say, you know, I had to call in because I'm so angry I can't take it. Why should beautiful civil institutions drive normal citizens to anger? Why are they doing this? Do they think this is a healthy thing for society? Do they think it's a good idea? What is the point of these congregant settings of recreation if it's to instantiate fear, if it's to implant fear into the children's minds? It's the exact opposite of the whole point of entertaining children throughout the millennia. It's the exact opposite. I was pulling out my old book from Neil Postman, a professor of sociology – passed away a few years back, but one of the most famous professors of sociology in our lifetimes at New York University, Neil Postman, wrote a book on, among other things, he wrote one book called The Disappearance of Childhood. And he was talking about how children learn in this section through fairy tale. And it's really interesting because, you know, a lot of those old fairy tales, grim and forward, they were pretty stark. They were pretty strong medicine. And he wrote this: the importance of fairy tales lies in their capacity to reveal the existence of evil in a form that permits children to integrate it without trauma. Children can understand evil if it is integrated without trauma. He continues to write, this is possible not only because the content of fairy tales has grown organically over centuries and is under the control of adults, but also because the psychological context in which the tales are told is usually reassuring and is therefore therapeutic. You put children in fear of one another, in fear of their parents, in fear of making their parents sick, in fear of not doing the right thing, telling them they have to cover up their faces or get a shot for something that will not affect them. And if they don't, they're endangering themselves or possibly their parents or their friends or their teachers. You have erased everything reassuring. You have erased everything therapeutic. And you are creating mental and social trauma. Let me tell you something. Using kids for these adult political games, it may not be a sin in any theology, but I'm telling you it's a moral sin. It's a moral sin to use children for adult political games. And it's an even worse sin to dangle and hang over them Christmas time or holiday time entertainment, holding that as the ransom. That's what these organizations are doing with our children. Shame on all of them. Shame on all of them. They should lose their charters, not just their donations. Mike is in Maricopa. Hi, Mike.
Yes, good afternoon, Seth. Say, number one, I would like to say thank you very much for your interview yesterday with the candidate for Attorney General Abraham Hamadeh.
Yeah, wasn't he great? Wasn't he just great?
It'd be great if we had a whole bunch of people like him. We'd have no problems anymore about that part. I touch real fast here. What I'm observing here is what is now being called a fifth generation warfare, not like the old fourth generation where we called it asymmetrical, but this is a new type of warfare. And the idea here is to not use weapons like guns. As I recall in the Kyle Rittenhouse case, the prosecutor had said if he wanted to get into a fight, he should have used his fists. And we had another example of that on the weekend when in the parade, then somebody uses a vehicle to run people intentionally.
Killed more people than Kyle Rittenhouse.
Absolutely. And
more than double the number. More than double the number.
And the number's still climbing.
Yeah, too. Evidently, sadly, I just learned that. Yeah.
Yes. Another example is to be hitting somebody in the head with a skateboard.
Sure.
And also we see all these piles of bricks mysteriously appearing. Now, I'll agree they've been using rocks in warfare at least since back at David and Goliath time, but yeah, this is something completely different. It would, as an example, be a kind of an information warfare, kind of.
Hold the thought, Mike. This is a deep concept, and I've got the short segment with the quick break. If you can hold, if you have the time, I have the air. We'll be right back. The awesome burning power of love. Mike in Maricopa, thanks for waiting with me, Mike. You were on to something pretty deep here, and I wanted to make sure you got your full thought through.
Yes,
Go ahead.
Yes, very good. I thank you very much. We had kind of left off. We were talking about information warfare, or as a part of this fifth generation type of warfare, and it kind of it found your monologue very interesting because of that sequence of yes or no questions.
Oh, okay.
Of how you work through the, well, if it's this, then it must be that,
yeah,
right?
Right.
And that part. So that would be kind of as an example of part of that information aspect of the fifth generation warfare. Now, in this type of warfare, this is more of a covert type, is because now it's much harder to tell who's behind it, who's behind the funding. You know, in the past, we used to have a proxy war, but this is not a proxy war like it was going on with Afghanistan and the Contras in Central America in the 1980s, because it was pretty obvious.
We didn't have boots on the ground in any kind of formal action. Yeah, right, right, right. I'm with you. Keep going.
Right, but the Soviets were funding the Afghan army.
Yep.
And we were funding the Mujahideen, where they didn't actually, it wasn't this army meets that army. It was more of a proxy war. This
for us, right? I mean, the Soviets were flying Hind helicopters into Afghanistan and targeting it. I mean, we were funding the Afghans, the Mujahideen, to fight back against the Soviets, right? I mean, that's
correct.
And in places like Nicaragua, you're right, it was really proxy by both sides. Yes, I'm with you. Go, I think.
Yes,
keep
okay.
going. You bet.
Okay, so in this type of warfare, it's more of a human terrain. It's not like a geographic type of a terrain, because it's kind of in the mind type of thing. It's a war of ideas, and that's kind of the thing. And we've touched about this before, as we explained, as the rules of war. Number one is to realize you are at war.
Yep.
This isn't just some protest between Antifa or Black Lives
right.
Matter. This is a different new type of warfare. The next one, we have to realize who's the enemy. And number three is to define the battlefield that you're on. And that kind of ties it back to your interview yesterday with Ibrahim Hamadeh, for the candidate for AG, when he was explaining the real issues of about what's going on with the southern border and the cartels, mm-hmm. and mentioned in that part. And it's almost a three or four things, fronts that are going on here. You've got the invasion coming up across the southern border. You had that lady that just called in, and they're tormenting these children and have to have all these vaccinations and masks and tests and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And used to it would be called psy war or psyops,
yep.
like psychological warfare.
Yep.
But the new term is, and it's been in for a while, but psyops and psy war seem to have stuck well. And that new term is called MISO, MISO, and it's military information support operations. I guess they changed that name. I guess maybe they thought that psy war and psyops was too harsh of a term, but that's kind of what is actually going on here right now. And in closing, I would like to say happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for what you do. And on behalf of myself and all the CESS radio family, we all wish you a very happy Thanksgiving, and thank you.
Oh, Mike, aren't you kind? Thank you very much. Do you have the sense, Mike, that this Thanksgiving just feels a little more pregnant and important than previous ones? Something about it does to me, and I can't put my finger on it. I'm looking forward to it more than I have in many years. I can't put my finger exactly on it. There's a feeling about something going on in the city right now, it feels like.
It seemed like as before it was like, I don't want to say drudgery.
Yeah. Okay. No, you're right, though. Yeah, there was a rolling of the eyes, whereas this year it feels a little more encouraging, looking forward to it, doesn't it?
We're like horses in the starting gate at the Kentucky Derby. We can't wait for that bell to ring.
Oh my gosh! Let me do an informal poll. I'm just curious. What is turkey the main center of your Thanksgiving meal? Is it is a turkey being cooked or fried or something? Okay.
Turkey, yams, the classic,
the
cranberries,
classic.
Pumpkin pie, and lots of
pumpkin
cool
pie whip. And the cranberries. Bill, do you have Frasier Crane's dad? Did you ever watch Frasier, the show Frasier? with Kelsey Grammer. Mike?
Yes, sir.
There's a great Thanksgiving episode where Marty Crane, Frasier's dad, is trying to instruct Daphne, the English helper, on how to do a Thanksgiving meal. And she's trying to make it all fancy and homemade. And she's, you know, stirring up cranberries and making some kind of pumpkin mush. And he's saying, you've got it all wrong. You've got it all wrong. The cranberries. Listen to this, Mike. Y'all, this is worth a chuckle. Just a little levity for the holiday. Listen to this.
Wait. What are you doing?
I'm mushing the potatoes.
By hand, you're supposed to whip potatoes. That way, every bite tastes the same.
Well, isn't that a bit bland?
Hello. Welcome to potatoes. Could you just once cook a traditional Thanksgiving meal? I mean, look at this cranberry sauce. It's supposed to keep the shape of the can. Quiver a little bit. What are all these little chunks in there?
Those are cranberries.
Dad, here you are. One frozen pumpkin pie as requested.
Honestly, wouldn't you rather I just bake a pie from scratch?
Is it that you can't learn or you won't learn?
Isn't that great, Mike? Is it that you can't learn or that you won't learn? Marty Crane is right. The cranberries need to maintain the shape of the can. There should not be cranberries in there. The pie needs to be frozen, and the potatoes need to be bland.
Bland. Yep. What's the sense of having the potatoes?
Yeah, what's the sense of otherwise? Well, your call was smart, Mike, and great and warm. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it, and I want to wish you a very happy Thanksgiving, too.
Well, thank you, Seth, and God bless you.
The point Mike's making, folks, is an important one. It's a really, really good war for the side that fights it when the other side doesn't know it's taking place. Imagine some kind of invasion where the invaded don't realize there's an occupation army coming in. A kind of odd situation where we are so a slumber that we don't realize that the knives are coming and the boots are coming. And then we wake up and we realize the world we live in is occupied by an invading force. Well, we don't have the force. We're all Americans here. But we do have an invading ideology. And it's grown stronger and stronger and stronger. I have a theory as to how some of this conservative reticence came about. I've told many of you I've been rereading a lot of books I read when I was younger, and I've been rereading them and learning so much more now with, you know, the time, the experience, perhaps a slightly more developed brain, I don't know. But one of the interesting things, how much time do I have, Bill? I have a minute. Let me save it for the other side of this break. I'll tell you what I have learned from rereading some of these old books from the 50s and 60s about why conservatives have been so slow to join the fight. We'll be right back. I was talking about Sarah Evans just the other day with a couple of friends, one of whom was from Oregon. And, boy, she had such a great voice, such a great voice. Why have conservatives been so slow on fighting this invading ideology? You know, it was when the Berlin Wall fell, and freedom started to reign over Europe, we all let out a big gasp. Yet only a few people were perspicacious enough to point out that though we had defeated communism abroad, we hadn't defeated it everywhere. We hadn't defeated it in China. And we hadn't defeated it in Cuba, and we hadn't defeated it on our American college campuses. And its real growth stock ended up being the American college campus. I submit to you that when we discounted what was going on in our colleges as just youthful indiscretions. We all had them. We all believed silly things in college. It would change when the students left. We were wrong. We were wrong. Those ideologies were a lab leak from the Ivory Universities, much more dangerous than anything out of Wuhan, because it affects our brains. It affects our brains. But going back and reading these old books from the 50s and 60s, I think one of the things I didn't appreciate, and I'm learning now, and any other historians or social historians or people just interested can aid me if I'm wrong. Help me out here if you think I'm wrong. I didn't realize how much Joe McCarthy dominated the mind and the writings of the liberal movement in America way beyond his death. The idea of becoming like Joe McCarthy, the idea of McCarthyism, the idea that you would speak ill of communism and thus be labeled a McCarthyite, attached to and was attached to, imputed to conservatives and Republicans for decades, decades. And Republicans and conservatives did not want to be labeled McCarthyites. I didn't realize how much of a weapon Joe McCarthy was against the conservative movement for decades after his passing, and how many conservatives were cowed into silence lest they be called McCarthyite. They're doing the same thing now, except they're not calling us McCarthyites. They're the new McCarthyites. They are calling us racists and white supremacists, and it cows us into silence. Do not be cowed. Do not be cowed. Do not be silenced. I'll put it better yet. Be not afraid. I'm Seth. We'll be right back. The Hallmans are in the house.